ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Every few weeks, there's another breaking news story about some huge new innovation in AI. It's already impacting the way we work, the way we design, the way we think. But there's a growing concern that soon it's going to start impacting the way we vote. And it's got governments and regulators scrambling. I'm Tegan Taylor, and this is Quick Smart, the show that feeds you big ideas in bite-sized pieces. So, with AI-generated images and videos already showing world leaders doing things that they didn't actually do, how can voters know what's real and what's a deep fake? And what kind of rules might help control AI without stifling the industry or sending people underground? Someone who's pulling up to the intersection of tech and geopolitics is Hamish McDonald. Hi, Hamish.
Hi, Tegan. How are you?
Good, thanks. So can you give us a sense of how quickly AI is moving in the political sphere?
I'm going to give you a picture because a picture, they say, paints a thousand words. And there's one picture that I'm thinking of right now, and it depicts Donald Trump surrounded by, kind of hugging some African-American voters. And that picture is not real. It's totally AI generated. And it was generated by one of his supporters. So not by his campaign, but someone that supports Trump, to seed into social media to show or signal the idea that Trump is reaching out and appealing to African-American voters. Now, it's interesting because it's a demographic where at the moment, Trump is actually building momentum. And if he can capitalize on that, leverage that in the lead up to the actual election in November, then this could work quite well for him. And so that's just one example of speaks to the now, not just the distant future where AI could be much more powerful and much stronger, of how it's impacting democracy today.
It's so interesting what you're saying about the fact that it wasn't even produced by his campaign, because we're talking about the risk to democracy, but there's also a real democratization of access to these really powerful tools that play into how we're used to consuming information.
Yeah, in some ways that's the other side of the same coin, right? And that's why so many people like Bill Gates, who are really deep thinkers, have a long view of these matters, say it's actually really exciting. AI is a powerful tool that'll be in the hands of most individuals on the planet to shape things, do things, create content, to communicate, to have their healthcare needs met or analysed, as well as all the other more dangerous, complicated and difficult stuff. I always think about this issue with a bit of a lens on who it is that is spruiking the potential, because people like Bill Gates have enormous financial investments in AI and AI technology and development. So, you know, they come with a bit of flavour to their commentary. But I still think, given Bill Gates' record, he's someone worth at least listening to and understanding when you're considering the potential future impacts of AI.
Yeah, so you've got really big, powerful individuals like Bill Gates on one hand, and you've got governments and regulators on the other. What are some of the ways that governments are looking to contain AI? Because it feels like the need to contain it is self-evident by this stage.
Yeah, because obviously we don't want AI getting ahead of things and making its own decisions against the interests of humanity. That's why it's such a big, fundamental, existential question for us. I think a really simple way of thinking about this, and we talked to someone called Anu Bradford in our episode of Global Roaming on this. She's written a book called Digital Empires. There are, in essence, three separate digital empires that are emerging on the planet today. One of those is the United States, another is China, and the other is EU, or the European Union. And they're each trying to regulate, control AI in very different ways. Those different ways are also instruments for them to project power globally and are going to give shape to what happens with AI for us, all of us, in the future. So China is regulating AI in a really state-controlled way. So, you know, all the stuff you might imagine, state control of the platforms, the technology, the companies that are doing it, they're using it for things like surveillance. The United States takes a more free market, free speech approach, as you would expect the United States to do, just kind of letting it rip and hoping the market will figure it out. And then the EU is taking a much more rights-based approach. So it's thinking about humans, our rights, our interactions with these technology. And at the moment, The EU is kind of getting out ahead of this beyond what other nations are doing in a way that is sort of shaping the global picture as far as regulation of AI is concerned.
It's kind of interesting as you're sort of going through that list, it's sort of almost the typecast response, what you would expect from those those nations or nation groups.
The touchy-feely Europeans that want to think about our rights, the Americans that just want free speech, and China that wants to kind of crack down and control everything.
So has the Australian response so far been, she'll be right, mate?
Probably up until recently, but actually Australia is now working on its own AI regulation. It's, as you would expect, just as you pointed out, kind of somewhere in between the Americans and the Europeans. We're not going quite as far as the Europeans, at least on the face of what's being talked about. We're not ignoring it completely, but we're clearly behind. And I think the other thing to consider is that Australia in this picture is pretty small. And a lot of the technology is being developed and I suppose funded from these much larger powers. So particularly China and the United States. And so much of the trade conflict between China and America today is based around access to some of the resources that are needed for the development of AI. So when you think about microchips, this has been a huge flashpoint between the United States and China. And it's part of why Taiwan is so important, because they actually develop and make so many of the world's microchips. This is central because it shapes what China and America can do in terms of the development of the really advanced artificial intelligence, particularly when it comes to things like weaponry, military systems, drones, all of that stuff. It makes Taiwan critical to sort of how this might play out.
Big things like weaponry and big kind of international potential conflicts are sort of some of the things that I prefer not to think about too much. And I wonder what the risk is if Australia steps back too much.
Yes, Australia is a small player, but we have actually stepped up to some of these organisations and it has had an impact. Not just here, but more broadly. And I think Australia is again considering its approach to things like news on platforms like Facebook. So it doesn't mean we don't have an influence, we don't have a say. Australian governments can still have impact on what these platforms or tech developers or tech companies do on our shores. It's more complicated because obviously they're transnational companies and what happens on the internet is sort of supranational, if you like. There are examples of sort of real life scenarios where governments here can go to the tech giants or the AI developers and say, where this has actual impact, we want a stake in this.
So we've talked a lot and there's been a lot of examples given about the way that AI can be harmful. If we're talking about misinformation and misleading images and that sort of thing, at the moment we're very much reliant on our own intuition and experience to kind of uncover whether something's real or not. Surely there's AI tools that can help us identify misinformation in the future?
100%. I think people are working on this, you know, places like the Oxford Reuters Institute. At Harvard, there's a new sort of AI digital center there that I know is being established. You know, Maria Ressa, the Nobel Prize winner who runs the news platform Rappler in the Philippines that sort of was jailed under Duterte, extraordinary woman. She talks about the way our information systems are like this sort of polluted torrent, and individual news organizations or players in the kind of media picture trying to clean that up is almost impossible. So you need much bigger tools that clean up these polluted waterways. And so if I had the intelligence to think about how to solve those challenges myself, I'd be looking at the way AI can be used to recognize and demarcate what is original content, what is truthful content, and what is not. I mean, if you just think about the way we sort of fact check things today, technology is getting pretty good at helping us solve those problems. You know, we can manually go back and scour through what's been said before, but I think increasingly we're going to be able to use technology to do that. So yes, hopefully systems will emerge that can help us spot those things. You know, big news organizations like the BBC are already going down the verify route, so they'll watermark things. There's also research that's been conducted about how you create a digital watermark so that you know when a piece of content is freshly created, whether it's authentic, and it'll carry that sort of digital watermark, that stamp, through its life, so that can be checked. You know, if you're watching television and sometimes there'll be a big logo sort of that's semi-transparent on the screen that says, you know, Channel 7 exclusive. So if you think about that as a watermark, a digital version of that so that when an original piece of content is filmed or audio is recorded or written, it carries an original watermark that you can then check and verify against. There are possibilities here to help solve some of these problems of polluted information waterways.
I love this public health approach to fighting misinformation. It's really speaking my language. The idea of taking sort of dirty water and turning it into a safe source and doing the same thing with information is really interesting to me. So we have an election coming up in Australia, as so many people around the world do as well. The tech's moving rapidly, as you say. What can individuals do, because we're talking a lot about policy, to equip themselves to sort of grapple with misinformation when they inevitably encounter it?
I think that's a really good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I mean, I personally, if you're asking me personally what I do, I always read multiple versions of the story. I don't know whether anyone has the appetite or the time to do that. But, you know, I want to see the way different news organisations are covering different stories. I start to kind of build a slightly broader lens.
It's an incredibly journo answer to that question.
Totally. And I'm sorry that it's not better. I mean, I'm increasingly aware of the fractured nature of both the way the media works, but also the way we all as a broader society consume it. Because, you know, I work on different media platforms, in different channels, in different audio and television and social media. And it constantly surprises me now how many different people come to me saying, oh, I heard you on a podcast or I saw you on TikTok. And even places that I have no idea why or how I'm there. I was in the chicken shop the other night and a guy came up to me and said, oh, I saw the thing you did with Mark Burris, you know, the mortgage broker guys on The Apprentice. And I was like, dude, I think that's fake news. I've never done anything with him. You know, when you're on social media platforms and you see like David Koch spruiking a thing or Twiggy Forrest, or I'm aware that there's lots of material of me with various business leaders talking about...
You're famous enough to be deepfaked.
I don't know whether it's famous or just no one would believe a word I say. Anyway, you know, and I had this interest, you know, he was really shocked. He said, I saw the thing you did with Mark Burris. I was like, dude, I think you've been had. I hope you didn't click through and buy anything.
Mm. Wow. So your personal brush with this as well as a very big professional global lens.
I should take my own investment advice.
Maybe not. Hamish, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tegan.
Quick Smart today was made on Gadigal land. And if you like this ep, share it with a friend, maybe that one person who always seems to know what the next big AI tool is going to be before everyone else. And if you want more from us on AI, check out the chat I had with Angela Voipierre about the potential looming AI doomsday, or our ep on, possibly most troubling of all, the effect AI is having on TV streaming services. I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.